You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, fairy tales filled with magic, adventure, and unlikely scenarios don't really portray the world in a realistic way, but a psychologist says these stories may help children learn more compared to realistic stories. We'll learn more in a bit.
First, when Rachel Carson's landmark book Silent Spring first appeared in 1962, it was quickly branded the most controversial book of the time. It also became an instant bestseller.
Carrying a dire warning of the long-term danger of pesticides, Silent Spring became the most influential popular science book of the 60s. Here's Rachel Carson making her case.
We have to remember that children born today are exposed to these chemicals from birth, perhaps even before birth. Now, what is going to happen to them in adult life as a result of that exposure? We simply don't know. Because we've never before had this kind of experience.
The chemical industry vilified Carson, but her book sparked a national debate. It also prompted President Kennedy to launch the first ever investigation into pesticides and their impact on humans and the environment.
Carson's book is credited with launching the environmental movement. A new American Experience film about Rachel Carson premieres tonight on PBS. It explores how Carson transformed our relationship with nature and continues to do so 55 years after Silent Spring was published.
William Souter is with us now. He's the author of On a Farther Shore, The Life and Legacy of Rachel Carson, author of Silent Spring. He was also an advisor on the documentary, which will air on Wisconsin Public Television tonight at 7 p.m., William, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Veronica. Nice to be with you.
Well, let's go back to 1962. What was the mood in the country like just before Rachel Carson's Silent Spring came out?
Well, this would have been the height of the Cold War. So, and the principal feature at that time, of course, is this standoff between the United States and the Soviet Union and this fierce arms race that was going on between the two countries, which involved the sort of continuous testing of nuclear weapons. And that is not unrelated to the point that Carson was making about pesticides. The clip you played just now is really interesting. It's hard for us to understand in 2017 that at one time, not so long ago, the idea of a chemical contaminant being a potential hazard either to the environment or to human health, that was a novel idea. And yet Carson understood that it was an existential problem. And she was able to illustrate that for the uninformed public by drawing a very clear parallel between the contamination of the environment with pesticides like DDT and the contamination of the environment with the radioactive fallout from the nuclear tests that were going on the entire time. It, well, I think, surprised people that were not alive back in 1962 or have forgotten, but in June of 1962 alone, the month when Silent Spring was serialized in the New Yorker magazine before it became a book, in that 1 month alone, the United States by itself tested 10 nuclear devices above ground in the atmosphere, and putting many, many tons of highly radioactive fallout into the upper atmosphere. Nowadays, the thought of that is horrifying to us, but it was routine then. So it was a different world. It was a world convinced that there was better living through chemistry, that technology would cure the world of all its ills. Those are nice ideas, and in many cases, they're true, but Carson's argument was that we need to be cautious. We need to understand that there may be unexpected outcomes when we begin tinkering with nature.
So given that this was a pretty radical idea, that she seemed to be flying in the face of this idea that science was a cure for all ills and DDT was a godsend, which is how it was viewed in the beginning, did she have trouble getting her message out there? Did people want to publish what she had to say?
Well, she was lucky, and people sometimes ask me if there could be another Rachel Carson. The problem is you have to start with someone who is one of the most famous and beloved authors on the face of the earth, which is what Carson was. In the mid-1950s, she had written three books about the ocean that were huge bestsellers that made her a household name literally around the world. And so, she didn't have any problem at all getting people to listen to her. Now, Silent Spring is a very different book. That's a very dire book. It's a fierce polemic against against the, you know, indiscriminate use of pesticides. Not a call for their the end of their use entirely, but certainly an urge, you know, a call for people to be a lot more cautious and to be aware of what they were doing. But Carson, again, was very famous. This is also a time before we had so discredited the media as we have today. This is a time when facts still mattered and when print still mattered, and a writer could make a persuasive case that people would listen to. She was not without opposition, as you indicated. The chemicals industry and its allies and government fought back fiercely against Rachel Carson, but they picked the wrong person.
There is a scene in the documentary that is actually kind of, it's hard to watch. It's of Naples where people are being deloused and they're being just completely sprayed from head to toe with DDT. And it seems like this was billed as a good thing, so you can see how what she was saying really turned the ship on the way things were going.
Yeah, this was, you know, during the wars, Second World War, this was when DDT came into wide use by the military. And it was used in Naples in 1943 to halt the typhus epidemic. We should say categorically that it did work. It worked in many, many cases, helped eradicate malaria in some parts of the world, not all, but in many parts of the world. It was very, there's no question that DDT was effective. The question was whether did it was it harmful to organisms that were not the target, that is, to the environment generally or to human health. And that was really Carson's concern. She understood that we needed to control insect-borne diseases like typhus and malaria, but she wanted us to also understand that we might do collateral damage if we were too reckless in how we use those pesticides. As you say, DDT was thought to be a miraculous, near miraculous discovery. Paul Muller, the Swiss chemist who discovered DDT, won the Nobel Prize for it.
Can you talk a little bit about what Rachel Carson was like as a person and the way, sort of the personal roots of who she was and,
sure.
and how she related to the environment informed that book that she wrote that changed so many people?
Carson grew up in a small town just a little bit north of Pittsburgh. She was born in 1907. And her mother instilled a real appreciation for nature in her at a very early age. And also at a very early age, Carson decided that she really wanted to be a writer. And she started selling stories to children's magazines when she was 10 years old. When she got to college, she went as an English major, but about halfway through became captivated by biology and switched majors and eventually found a way to combine these two passions in life. That's really what you want to think of Rachel Carson as, a writer who wrote about science. And in some cases, it was about the ocean. In the case of Silent Spring, it was about pesticides. But she was a shy person. She spent most of her adult life living with her mother and a couple of cats, very quiet, but not afraid to speak out. And in the case of Silent Spring, not only was she not afraid to speak up, but she always said that she felt obligated to speak out. She had known since the early 1940s that there were potential problems with these pesticides, and by the late 1950s, she just felt she couldn't stay quiet anymore. And so Silent Spring was, I think, in her own mind, a duty, an obligation that she needed to fulfill.
Can you give us a sense of the cultural and the political reaction that came after Silent Spring?
Well, this was something that really interested me because I've written a lot about American history and environmental history. It's always been a puzzle to me why we have this partisan argument over the environment. Why does a Republican feel differently about the environment than a Democrat does, even though both live in the same global ecosystem? And part of the reason for that divide doesn't explain everything, but a big part of it was the reaction to Silent Spring. When Carson's critics, and again, they came mainly from the chemicals industry and from their partners in government, really tried to discredit her by questioning her science, by questioning her motivations, and specifically by pushing her to the left side of the political spectrum. She was actually accused of being a communist or being in league with the Soviet Union in some way, and was accused of having an agenda that was to, you know, either curtail or eliminate the use of pesticides in the United States as a way of kind of bringing our agricultural output down to that of the Soviet Union. And so on the one side of this, you have on the left side of the political spectrum, scientists, people interested in the truth, people interested in the environment, people who want to conserve nature in its unadulterated state for future generations. And on the other side, you have business and its connections in government on the right side of the political spectrum. So if you look at the fight that we have now going on over climate change, it's exactly the same fight that we had over pesticides, and people have chosen up sides in exactly the same way they did over Silent Spring. So in an important way, Silent Spring not only launched the environmental movement, it kind of set the terms of the debate over the environmental movement.
William, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Veronica.
That is William Souter, author of On a Farther Shore, The Life and Legacy of Rachel Carson, author of Silent Spring. He was also an advisor on the New American Experience film called Rachel Carson, which will air on Wisconsin Public Television tonight at 7. For more information and listings, go to the schedule page at WPT.org.
Coming up, stories that feature fantastical scenarios may help kids learn better than realistic stories. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time.